Good morning, planet Earth. It is April the 29th, 2026. It's still Bo Blimp Doc, and I'm still fucking crazy. It's right around 11 a.m. here on the Olympic Peninsula, and I have a quote for you, a quote from Dr. Freckles, the master of total cocaine hooker disaster, the hero that is not Zero, the weirdo from Planet Sleardo, the chaos agent of lessons. He's here to teach you a fucking lesson. Dr. Freckles. Initiative is hard fought and easily lost. Momentum is difficult to gain, and then you lose your grip, and then you slip. Dan, why would you bring that up into this multi-week debacle that we're calling, what, the Iran war? Did we declare war? I guess in a couple days we're going to find out if the War Powers Act is still a thing. But Trump can just pull an Obama, you know? Obama did all kinds of violent bullshit without declaring war because of why? The global war on terror, the GWAT. The GWAT was the gift that kept on giving. The NDAA and the GWAT. Every year there was money to blow people up with drones. Obama was okay with that. So Trump could just pull an Obama and just ignore the fact that the War Powers Act is a thing. And yeah, he could do that. And then there's Iran. And if Iran were wise, people say, well, Iran's playing the eight-dimensional chess now, maybe. But in fact, the longer this blockade standoff lasts, the worse it is for everybody. And no amount of China propaganda changes that. China is in the same boat as everybody else. If somebody believes magically they have so much extra oil that this won't impact them, they're kind of crazy. This is a big deal for everybody. And then there's the issue of food. Because whether China has plenty of energy is, you know, a question mark. They sure as shit don't have plenty of food. One of the major stressors in Chinese society, not so many years ago, before the COVID, before the monkey herpes, before the Great Purge, because it wasn't a pandemic, but in China it was probably a purge, the Great Purge of 2020, where I would guess about 100 million Chinese went bye-bye. Oh, damn, they were fighting the monkey. I know, the monkey herpes. I know, puddle flower. Days are coming. You better hope I'm batshit fucking crazy, because days are coming, puddle flower, and you won't make it through the day. You won't make it through the day, not without crying yourself to sleep. Yeah. Initiative is hard. In late July of 1941, Army Group Center and its avant-garde elite unit, Heinz Guderian's Panzer Corps, were roughly 150 miles from Moscow. More than 80% of all Soviet strategic forces had been destroyed up to that point. This is late July 1941. Now, of course, according to a couple of historians of World War II, if Hitler had been incapacitated, if he'd gone into a coma, if he'd simply not been in the decision cycle in late July 1941, there is every chance that by late August 1941, the Soviet Union would have collapsed, at least that part of it in Moscow. And what's specific is something called the Moscow-Gorky mobilization space, which, by the way, is still kind of a thing today. It is the weakness of Russian society. Its strength is its weakness. Even to this day, there aren't really tons and tons of super fast highways. Yes, they got railroads, but railroads can be dismantled. They can be rebuilt and they can be dismantled. It is the tit for tat of warfare. But in a lot of ways, it's way more annoying to put them back together again than it is to take them apart. And then there are railroad issues involving bridges, and those aren't so easily put back together again. So the simple reality is that the same enemy that can destroy you if you decide to invade Russia is also the same enemy that can make it difficult for Russians to reinforce. This has not changed since 1941. A lot of edgelords don't get this. I don't care. I studied this in graduate school. I may have been a shitty student, but I learned this one fucking lesson. There are no high-speed avenues of approach anywhere in Russia. There are none. You got mountains, you got swamps. You got swamps that are frozen part of the year, and then they're not so frozen. You've got the Rasputitsa that hits you twice a year. You got the rainy season Rasputitsa, and then you got the great spring thaw. You have no high-speed avenues of approach at all. They don't exist in Russia. All you got are mountains and swamps and woods. And depending upon the time of the year, it can be quite brutal. Now, given that much of Siberia is experiencing permafrost collapse, yeah, there are no high-speed avenues of approach, even in wintertime. And ironically, winter is almost a better time to launch, well, maybe not launch an offensive, but winter is way easier for the Russians to reinforce because, again, yes, it's cold as fuck, they're used to that, but these roads become, well, firmer in the wintertime, easier to transport on. As ironic as it may sound to you, to a Russian, it probably makes way more sense. In late July 1941, there were no effective forces between Moscow and Heinz Guderian's unit. None. Yes, he had had losses. Yes, he had issues with some resupply. But the reality is there was nothing there. If he had been given the order to lunge forward, probably within 2 weeks, they would have captured Moscow, definitely by the end of August. This is before the Rasputitsa. This is before the great autumn rain. This is well before the coming of winter. And keep in mind, once you've captured this mobilization space, then the fact that there were, you know, divisions of T-34s fighting Japanese in Manchuria becomes less of an effective fucking issue because you can't get them to the battlefield. Or by the time you get them there, it'll be too late. And by the way, the Germans will have built their forward air force, you know, bases. They would have started using a strategic air campaign against you. I can keep going. There was a window of opportunity. And this is the point. There's a good book on this called Hitler's Panzers East. And again, I'm not defending Hitler. Hitler was an evil son of a bitch. So was Stalin. If there had been just a planet, we could have transported the commies and the Nazis and the fascists to and just say, duke it out, fight, you know, fight planet. I would have preferred that. Not that I want to see anybody die, but if people really do want to do horrific things to one another, find a planet and transport them there. Okay, maybe this is what Australia should be for. Sorry, I know that sounds mean-spirited, but maybe the purpose of Australia should be a big giant fight club for douchebags who just can't live in normal society. Initiative, momentum, the juice in warfare is hard fought. In late July 1941, Guderian had fought for it, and if he had been given the chance, frankly, World War II would have turned out a lot differently. Yes, Stalin might have fought on, certainly the Soviets would have, far, far east of the Urals. And they were preparing for that, so fine. They had moved factories there. They were actually preparing for a reconstitution of the Soviet Union east of the Urals. And from the German perspective, all they wanted were the good European parts of Russia. They didn't care about the rest of it at that point and probably didn't see an issue with trading with whatever nation state was left over after the destruction of Stalin and the Soviet Union. Because Stalin probably wouldn't have made it. At that point in late July 1941, he was hiding. He was hiding, he was cowering. He was not really doing anything effective in a lot of ways. Yes, he was giving one or two speeches here and there, but they weren't really effective. And nobody really liked him. That's the other thing too. If the Germans had not been as truly fucking horrible to the indigenous peoples of the Ukraine and Russia, if they had not chosen to make it an ethnic issue in some cases, then it probably would have turned out a lot differently. They tried to involve the Ukrainians in a kind of I don't know, European white man's war, but the reality is that that wasn't very effective. The Germans were not prepared to fight a long war. This is another thing, too. Up until that point in the war, the Germans had demobilized after every major campaign. Up until that point in the war, specifically up until Barbarossa, June 22nd, the Germans had only lost 40,000 dead. Now, yeah, 40,000 dead is a big deal, but they'd taken over Western Europe. 40,000 dead. That's not such a bad deal. If you're, you know, the butcher's guy keeping track of numbers, that's actually a pretty good deal. Again, I'm not defending warfare. Why am I beating up on this point? Because a few weeks ago, the Iranians had the initiative. You could claim they still do. I can't see it. I think that they're letting themselves be pulled into what looks like the fun house, the mirror house, the house of deception and delusion, that frankly, this is what the state of Israel is good at. This is what the CIA is good at. They even have, I heard a guy, this Larry guy, Larry whatever, who's a talking head ex-CIA, and he said, you know, the CIA doesn't have very good psyops, you know, Larry whatever. Larry's full of shit. I saw with my own eyes the psyops the CIA can pull off. He's a fucking idiot. Or he's a disinformation agent. Larry. Is it Larry Thompson? I don't care. And he's interesting. He's entertaining. There's a lot of edgelord talking heads talking it up right now. Here's the deal. I have not seen one short-range air defense officer have a serious conversation about the neglect of air defense in the U.S. Army since the 1980s. Not one. It's funny. For all the conversations about drones and air defense, I still, to this day, would like to see any of these quote-unquote great YouTube channels have an actual 14 Sierra explain what short-range air defense is. And what's also as important, if you were commissioned in the 90s, what maneuver commanders were telling you, which is, we don't give a fuck. That was the message in the 90s. Maybe it changed with the Great War on Terror. I was not involved in GWAT. I did not go fight the poor people to somehow avenge deaths created by probably the state of Israel and the CIA. No, I didn't involve myself in GWAT. I thought about it. I was confused for a couple years, and I'll freely admit that, because in so many ways, that situation, 9/11, was like being punched in the head, punched in the face, knocked out. And when you came to, if you ever did care about the country, you had to ask yourself, what fucking country did you care about? So I'll admit a couple years of confusion, even when I thought about going in, going to the CIA, stuff like that, fight the terrorists, right? But if you were an air defense officer, specifically 14 Sierra, short-range air defense, going back 30, 40 years ago, you can repeat what I can repeat. Maneuver commanders said it does not matter. We have the Air Force, we have the Navy, we have the Marine Corps, we have drones, yes. 30 years ago, we had drones. Guess what? We used drones in I think, the first Gulf War, by the way. We used drones going back a long ways. It's not a new technology in terms of today. It was new in the 90s, but it's not new today. Are the drones smarter? Sure as shit, they're smarter. Probably. I'd hope so, given what they tell us about, you know, Moore's Law and all the AI bimbo eruption. Sure, they got to be smarter, right? But everything was there. The concepts were there. It wasn't a revolution in military affairs. It wasn't a light bulb. It was polishing the candle. This is another thing people don't get about the drone thing. Drones are very interesting and amazing, but they are the natural evolution of technology that the Germans pioneered almost 100 fucking years ago. During World War II, the Germans had wire-guided bombs. During World War II, they had television cameras hooked up to their bombs. Did they make a lot of them? No, but they made them. They had technology that looked a lot like a transistor. There's a great historian you can read, Joseph Farrell. He'll tell you more. And by the way, Joseph Farrell partially answered the question, why the fuck did we lose the race for Berlin? Because it probably wasn't a mistake. It was probably on purpose. Oh, I'm sorry. And maybe the von Braun shit was not the crown jewels. Maybe. So yeah, I'd love to see the 14 Sierra on the TV show, on the fucking YouTube channel, having a serious conversation about what maneuver commanders, colonels and lieutenant colonels were telling young air defense officers 20, 30 years ago. And what they mostly said was, oh, you're so funny. Make sure you bring the popcorn. Can you turn on the coffee pot in the morning? Go fuck yourself. Okay? This type of negligence was a product of a big picture. And it wasn't just about those maneuver commanders, but it was, and it is about the culture. In so many ways about the culture. And now looking back, I don't see it as remotely accidental, especially given the upgrade in geoengineering we've experienced since the 90s. Why would you want people like that to have professional competence when their job is to look to the skies and figure out if an enemy is approaching, to use radar to do the same, to develop tactics and techniques to counter, yes, drone warfare, okay? Short-range helicopter warfare, definitely an F-105. Yeah, an F-fucking-105, folks. But Dan, that's the plane from the first Top Gun movie. In late July, barely a month into Operation Barbarossa, the Germans had initiative. If they had decided to lunge forward in late July and take Moscow, maybe the Germans would have lost World War II. But then again, in 42, Albert Speer became Reichsminister for Economics, and then the Germans began what we would call total war and rational war planning. So if Speer and the scientists and the engineers of Germany had had 3 or 4 more years without strategic bombing, without us tearing them up with B-17s, we don't really know what would have happened. The Germans were very close to developing a nuclear weapon, way closer than our government cares to admit. They love to point it the other direction, but they're wrong. There's evidence to believe they tested a nuke, I think, in October or November of 1944 in the Baltic. So yeah, there's a lot about World War II people think they know that they don't know. You know, they don't know it all, probably. Initiative. Momentum. Okay, the stuff that Guderian had, the energy, frankly, just the morale. I mean, imagine taking out the Soviet Union nearly as fast as you took out France. That was the goal. That was the award. And instead, Hitler turned forces south to take the Ukraine because, as you know, I think Stolfi would say from Oklahoma University, he was raised on World War I, which is siege warfare. He saw it as siege warfare, which is another reason you motherfuckers got to look at the Ukraine war also and ask yourself some serious questions about operational military science, because none of it fucking adds up. I know I've had gaslighters the last couple of years trying to feed me with monkey herpes Putin nonsense, but the fact is, even with the drone warfare, none of it really does add up. Okay, it's almost like Putin wants it to be a meat grinder, but it's a meat grinder for him too. Okay, there are choices he could make to end the war very quickly, but why is he not making them? Well, I have a theory, but it's a really terribly fucking awful theory, and it has nothing to do with World War III, Putin, monkey herpes, or Antifa at all. 2 weeks ago, Iran had the initiative. If they had stuck with their campaign specifically, if they had kept targeting the state of Israel would simply have ceased to exist because everybody would have fucking left. Economically, it would have been a fail. You take out their desalinization plants, it's a giant fail. There's not a lot of real estate there. Maybe the state of Israel becomes virtual at that point, you know, maybe spread out around the world, they form an NGO-style country. Who knows and who cares? At that point, hopefully they still don't have their nuclear weapons, right? One hopes. I mean, supposedly we care about terrorism, but from what I can tell, the most terroristic state in the Middle East is the state of Israel. Murderous, terroristic, and nobody fucking cares. The Samson option is literally a giant fucking terror fatwa against the whole fucking world, and nobody fucking cares. You know, oh, Israel's so kind and good. Yeah, unless you're a Christian being spat on. Initiative is hard fought. Momentum is difficult to get. Being in charge is difficult. Being in the lead is really a challenge. Getting to the top of the mountain is the hard part, but you got to get down again too. You don't want to culminate. What is culmination? Culmination is where you've used up all your resources and you still haven't hit the objective. And frankly, this is the situation that the state of Israel and Trump found themselves in 2-3 weeks ago. If Iran had maintained the initiative, they would have forced basically Trump into an impossible situation. And you could say, well, Dan, they didn't want to push him that far. He's already either crazy or not crazy. That's not even the issue at this point. Right now, he has more options than he had 2 weeks ago. By definition, that means that Iran has lost the initiative. It doesn't matter if you think they can still win. They probably still can because their opponents are stupid. And the other reason why they still might win is because their opponents are still playing crony late 20th century military planning, which means a lot of hefty profits for scumbags, but not necessarily good weapons. They're still playing it that way. And the problem is, on the economic level, the Iranians can simply produce more drones and missiles for the same amount of money and do more damage. They don't need an air force because the missile itself is the air force. They don't need a navy because the missile itself is their local navy. They have no interest in going further than that. And if they need a navy, they'll probably just purchase more diesel electric submarines from the Russians, you know? Because that would be smart, or smarter than some sort of, you know, let's build out a battleship for Trump. Yeah, that's smart. I may have beat a dead horse here. I want you guys to understand the gravity of this. If you think that this war between Iran, the United States, and Israel, whatever, if you think this is real, if you think it's a geopolitical event that has mass, it's not an op, it's not synthetic, it's not contrived, it's real, then understand this. Iran's decision to back off 2 weeks ago from its missile campaign indicates one of two things. Either they really are almost out of missiles, or B, they're not getting good advice. And this applies to Putin as well. It doesn't really add up. The longer the war in the Ukraine lasts, the worse it is for Putin. It's not better for him. People think it's better. Why? The Europeans don't care how many Ukrainians die. Can I just give you that news flash? The Europeans do not care how many Ukrainians die. In fact, that's probably a feature, not a bug, because they will simply do what Hitler planned on doing in 1941. They'll simply repopulate it with good Germans. I don't know, probably more like Turks. But the point is, they'll simply repopulate it, and it'll become a mishmash guamalash like the rest of Europe going down the same toilet bowl. Welcome to the party. Okay, they don't care how many Ukrainians they kill. If the Ukrainians understood this, they would stop the war tomorrow. But the Europeans just don't fucking care. In fact, the more Ukrainians die, the better as far as they're concerned. Yeah. And that's also the state of Israel. We'll leave it there. Initiative is hard fought and easily lost, folks. And if Iran does not understand that, they could actually lose the war. But between you and me, I think there's a deeper story going on here. You may not be aware of this, but there are Nile crocodiles in Florida. Oh, nobody wants to admit it. Oh, Dan, that's disputed. The Florida government says it's just not an issue. They haven't found breeding pairs or couplets. There are crocodiles in the swamps of Florida. They're waiting for you, baby, when you go on vacation. They'll be waiting for you in Lake Okeechobee. There are crocodiles in Florida. Nile crocodiles, Lyle the crocodile. There's a movie coming out next summer called Miami Flood Crocodile Nightmare. It's a horror film about Miami collapsing into a giant fucking limestone sinkhole mostly. And it fills with water, but the pumps can't keep up. And all the Nile crocodiles that the Florida government says does not exist come a-hunting. So you have octogenarians in kayaks trying to outrun the killer crocodiles. Every once in a while, a Burmese python takes a pug. It's poignant and sad. Miami flood, crocodile nightmare, coming out this summer in a theater near you. Dan, that's crazy sounding. I know it's crazy sounding. So, I have a link to a miniature documentary. Again, I can't tell you what's true and not true. One thing I found interesting from a Sovietological perspective is that in the documentary, the narrator says the Inuit dialects don't even have a word for forest fire. The Inuit dialects don't have a word for forest fire. They got words, like a whole bunch of words, for snow and ice, a whole bunch of words for various types of freezing things that aren't nice. But the Inuit dialects have no fucking word for forest fire. Well, Dan, that's because I know we left the silent part out. In the last few decades, the Arctic and subarctic have been converting. I don't know. I remember going on my honeymoon in 2005 on the Kenai River, and I was pointing out the trees that were tilted over. And the guide actually had a smile for a second, and then when I mentioned it, his smile turned upside down, and he said, "Yeah, those are drunken forests." Well, the reason why they're drunken forests is that there used to be permafrost underneath those trees that kept them from basically tipping over. That's how far the permafrost went. It wasn't there on top year-round, but there was enough under the surface that trees wouldn't just slump over. You didn't have a shit ton of sinkholes. You didn't have a shit ton of giant gapes opening up across Alaska where brand new lakes exist and the beavers are moving in. And yeah, maybe I mean the hookers too. The Inuit dialect, if you research this online, you get a lot of sideways AI responses. Like, they'll admit, oh, of course they don't, because in their region there were never forests until recently. Now you have grasslands and forests growing all over the place where they didn't used to be. And now you have peat fires, and peat fires are fires that burn below the surface and on top the surface. You have peat fires across the Arctic Circle the last decade that haven't gone out. They just keep burning year-round. Nobody likes to talk about it. Nobody wants to talk about it. But if you want to take people's focus off of 70% of the Arctic Circle, you know what's a great thing to do? The Ukraine war. Because NATO controls the rest. And they can spin whatever propaganda bullshit they want to. And they know most people are either too stupid or too poor to ever get to the Arctic to figure out what's going on. That's what they also know. And so there's this short documentary called Arctic Invaders, Orcas, The Brutal Orca Takeover. I liked it. It was pretty good. The thing that they're not mentioning, and they don't want to mention, is one of the reasons why the orcas are moving as far north as they are is because it's getting too hot in a lot of places in the oceans. Too hot for them to live, not enough food. This story is linked to the other story we talked about the other day. You know, the whales that are just washing up and it looks like they've starved to death? Well, these are linked stories, folks. Whatever's going on in the ocean, something is going on. And I can see it with my own eyes, comparing it to when I was a kid. The Puget Sound ain't what it used to be. Is it a dead sea yet? No. It's got way too much nutrient mass for that. Huh? Joke, right? No. But it's not what it was when I was a kid. And much of the ocean is not either, probably. I mean, from what I can tell locally, it seems like nature has gone through a great ordeal. Does this mean it's because of you driving your SUV or eating hot dogs? I keep repeating this, but nobody hears me. Okay? When the building is aflame, find some poor folks to blame. If this puts them in a bad mood, take away their food. This is the oldest story of every civilization that's ever been on this crooked FAFO planet. This is how governments work. This is their standard operating procedure. If something fails, if something's broken, if there's a crisis, find somebody weak and powerless to blame. This is the story of government, but people are too fucking dumb to see it, really. Yeah. Anywho. I believe this is happening. I also think it is interesting the Inuits don't have words for forest fires because, yeah, it used to be permafrost. In fact, in the documentary, the narrator defines permafrost correctly. This is what I have to give him credit for. He defines it 100% correctly. If you can hear a washing machine in the background, I don't control the audio in this place. The narrator says permanently frozen. He doesn't say frozen for at least 2 years. He points out that the reason why this many orcas have never been seen in the Arctic before is because up until recently, they could not live there and there were better places for them to live. The truth is, they're going to the Arctic because the oceans are heating up, folks. And the Arctic is heating up, too. It's just that it's just a much cooler place. What's ironic is it's heating 4 times faster than everywhere else. But it's still a cool place. And for a certain time of year, it's a good place for these orcas to go and hunt for food. Because that's another thing, too. The food that was in other locations just ain't what it used to be. You can research the local orca pods in the Puget Sound. And yes, there's a lot of happy, shiny, you know, they'll be okay, but no, it's not what it used to be, folks. Whatever is coming, significant parts of the ocean are changing. And this doesn't mean it's the end of the world, but fuck. If it's hothouse Earth, a lot of people will be moving soon. I might be able to stay where I'm at, but a lot of people, if you live in Vegas, you need to move. Put up your home for sale today. Tell me how it turned out, really. I'm serious. So here's a quote from Truth Social of Donald J. Trump. Trump, the emperor of schmemperers, the Dorito Bandito, the Marshall Cheeto. This is a statement from President Donald J. Mofo Trump. Iran has just informed us that they are in a state of collapse. They want us to open the Strait of Hormuz as soon as possible. As they try to figure out their leadership situation, which I believe they will be able to do, thank you for your attention to this matter, President and Emperor Marshall Cheeto, Dorito Bandito, the Benito of Nito, Donald J. Flumpity Blumpity Glumpity Trump. Gosh, I feel so bad that I ever said anything horrible, Right, Secret Service? But Dan, that guy from California almost took out Papa Blumpity Blump, and if he'd had his ballroom, yeah. If you believe this is real, like you think Donald Trump has mass. My mistake from November of last year is for a moment, under the influence of whiskey, I took him seriously. And I shouldn't have. But if you believe this guy is what he's saying is real, the statements he makes are real, then you should be deeply concerned. Because no one is showing any ability to remove him from office. And he does have the ability to order the use of nuclear weapons. There's a lot of nonsense about how, well, the generals will stand up to him. It doesn't matter. All it takes is him and Pete Hegseth. And frankly, maybe there are generals in the Strategic Air Command who will stand up to him. But the Navy's going to do what they tell him to do because the Navy's in submarines. In fact, chances are we've had missile boats deployed way since before February the 28th, and there's a good chance they're operating under orders that make them kind of incommunicado. So if all of a sudden one of these nuke subs gets an order, launch missiles on targets, A, B, C, and D, yeah, the nuclear subcommanders are going to do this. In fact, probably this is the weapon of choice in the case of Papa Blumpity Blump, which is ironic, because in the context of the triad, the nuclear submarine is sort of the revenge weapon. It's not a first strike weapon, it's a counter-strike weapon. Well, I don't think Trump understands military science, folks. He sounds batshit crazy, and no one is stopping him from doing batshit crazy stuff. It looks like the consensus amongst the edgelords, and I say the edgelords, people like, you know, shows that Larry goes on, or Daniel Davis's show, or Alistair Crook, or any of the current, you know, Colonel McGregor edgelords. Danny Haifong, the Duran, et al. The consensus is this is going to cause real economic damage. Well, what did I say, brothers and sisters, so many years ago? That at the end, this is what it would look like. It would look like this sort of type of thing, but kind of orchestrated and managed, which is also what it looks like. And it looks like there's a dial connected to it that they can turn up or turn down, which also seems to match. Anywho, Iran, Iran is in a state of collapse, according to Papa Blumpity Blump, and that's just the way it is. Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. Reality is not a democracy. Well, what does that mean, Daniel? Reality is not a democracy. What does that mean? Well, it kind of means what it sounds like. Whether or not Robert's rules of order or parliamentary procedures are good ways to manage meetings or to come to consensus, I'll leave that to the experts at the business school. But what I will say is this: you can vote all day long. You can vote to your heart's content. If we've crossed a tipping point with respect to global permafrost collapse, no amount of voting is going to stop that. You can vote and vote and vote. You can tax and tax and tax. You can vote to have laws and taxes, and vote to have cops and armies, and you can vote to have people thrown in prison. None of that will change the fact that if we've crossed a tipping point with permafrost, it's over, at least as far as that equilibrium. Doesn't mean it's the end of the world, necessarily, but it does mean we're taking a ticket to a whole new equilibrium state for the Earth's climate, and it's going to be crazy on the way there. And it's not going to be linear, it's not going to be a long emergency, well, unless you mean a horribly long, catastrophically horrible emergency, but then that's what, you know, a geological time frame transition, you know, exclamation mark looks like. That's what punctuated equilibrium looks like. Hundreds, if not thousands, of years of chaos. And if we're lucky, maybe not that many that are, well, truly catastrophic, but we just don't know yet. If it's hothouse Earth, but the point is, if it is hothouse Earth, if that's where we're headed, you can vote all day long. You can join the Republicans, you can join the Democrats, you can become a communist if you want to. You can be crazy as fuck. You can pick some, you know, weird ass single mom avocado toast eater and make her mayor of Seattle. And no amount of that delusion is going to change shit. If we are headed towards total economic collapse, you can vote all day long. It won't change shit. If the petrodollar is toast, which I think it is, and I think it became toast a few weeks ago, if the petrodollar is toast, no amount of voting is going to change that, okay? If Iran has lost the initiative in the war and ends up losing, they could vote all day, and that won't change shit. If Iran decides to launch a major missile strike and take out the desalinization plants and the Gulf infrastructure for oil production, no amount of voting will change that. The world has changed, and a certain kind of world is just over, and your democracy will have no impact. Well, Dan, we can vote on how we respond. You can. You can, but I hate to break it to you, democracy doesn't imply better decision-making. You know, this idea that a bunch of people voting will somehow lead to good decisions, I think, is kind of flawed. Doesn't mean I want dictatorship. What I prefer is actual freedom. But we don't live in a free country any longer. At least from my perspective, not nearly as free as even when I was a kid. And even when I was a kid, it was still kind of a crooked place, but it was freer. We don't live there any longer. No amount of voting is going to change shit, folks. If you think reality is a democracy, you're deeply fucking confused. Now, the good news is very soon, a giant fist called reality is going to punch most of you in the face. And if you're lucky, you'll wake up a little dazed and you'll learn a fucking lesson. If you're unlucky, that'll be the knockout punch. And it's over for you and your genetic line. And from at least the evolutionary perspective, yeah, you're done. You're donezo. And I'm okay with that because I'm donezo too. I'm donezo and I'm okay. Reality is not a democracy, folks. Okay? I don't know how many Neanderthal there were. In fact, that whole story could be bullshit too. But let's play pretend. Let's put on our imagination helmet and believe that once 60 or 70,000 fucking years ago, there were Neanderthal and they coexisted with Homo sapiens. And then something happened. Who knows? Maybe it was a caldera explosion. Maybe it was some type of virus. But then over a period of time, relatively brief period of time, the Neanderthal disappeared. And so did a lot of other proto-humans. It's almost as if some other person came along and just, you know, wanted to have everything to eat. Like they went to the restaurant and it was called Nature. And it turns out nature is, you know, all you can eat. But generally speaking, most of nature's stomachs, they fill up quite nicely. So generally you don't eat everything. But then Homo sapiens, with our clever little minds and our clever little fingers, started making knives and weapons. And even if the Neanderthal had weapons too, they probably, maybe they were just more empathetic. Maybe they just cared more. Maybe they simply didn't have the sociopathic trait. Maybe the truth is we raped and killed them out of existence because that's what we do. And it hasn't changed in 70,000 fucking years. Why would it change now? You can vote all day long. You can vote all the live long day, and no amount of voting will change that. And as far as God goes, that applies infinitely so. You can say there's no God, and you can take a vote. You can take a vote, and I bet today, if you took a Democratic vote in the United States of America, I'm being honest, I think most people would, barely most people, would still say there's a God. Maybe. I think it would be 50-50, but let's play pretend. It could even be worse, to tell you the truth. It could be that most people don't believe in God. But let's play pretend that 60% of Americans believe in God. Does that mean there's a God? No, that doesn't mean anything. If you asked Americans, do you believe in aliens? I bet you'd get 80%. Does that mean aliens exist? No. If you asked Americans, do you believe in angels? I bet you'd get about 85%. Even the fucking atheists on a drunken Monday afternoon believe in angels. Maybe most especially them. Yeah. If you took a vote and asked Americans, you believe in Bigfoot, I bet you'd get a majority. Maybe not more than 55, but you'd get at least over 50, right? I think Americans could vote on a bunch of stuff and no amount of voting would make it true. And no amount of voting would make it useful. And no amount of voting makes something right that is evil. Okay? There was a time in American history where the citizens that could vote, you know, for the most part, supported some things that were pretty terrible, to include some wars against folks who were here first. You know, a bad HOA, a bad homeowners association. And they kept voting and, yeah, they pushed out the poor, but they didn't realize how much they destroyed their own soul. And how that leads to the crookedness. It's kind of like that Paul Harvey rant from 20 years ago. He leaves out the silent part. Murdering and killing, torturing, handing out the smallpox blankets. This destroys your fucking soul. If all you have are soulless freaks, all you have is a pirate ship, and it's never going to last. If you want to build a community, a society, you have to have people that understand a couple things. Number one, you don't get the vote on reality. Reality is what it is. We have to accept it for what it is. Number two, people need freedom as much as they need food, water, shelter, and air they can fucking breathe. You take away the freedom, you doom yourself. And last but not least, what we do as people does impact our souls and our cultures. If we choose to go to war with a community to steal their shit, that is something that sticks. It doesn't go away. Anyways, it is April the 29th, 2026. It is almost 11:50 a.m., which means it's still the morning time. It's not the noon time yet. It's still your early morning lunchtime. You can grab a soup and a sandwich. You can have a grilled cheese. Have a pastrami melt. Maybe a Monte Cristo. Maybe a Italian sub. Maybe a PB&J. Maybe a patty melt, maybe a cheeseburger, maybe an Italian spicy beef sandwich you got in Chicago, you motherfucker friend of mine. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. It's hump day. Who knows what comes tomorrow, right? Everything's kind of crazy. If you don't pray, I'm not going to tell you to pray because you kind of have to have faith first, I think. I don't think you get to pray for faith, but maybe you do. So you know what? Now might be a good time to pray. If you have faith, it's always a good time to pray. If you're losing your faith, don't feel like a jerk because a lot of us aren't doing so well right now, to include me. I have just enough faith to barely believe right now. But right now, when I look at reality, I see something that is god-awful. And it could be that what I'm seeing is that place that is being made and prepared for the one to be, you know, the one to be revealed. Who knows? And I don't mean the second coming of Christ. I mean the guy that shows up first or whatever shows up second. The guy that shows up who is not Christ. Is that easy for everybody in prophecy? They're preparing it right now. It looks like it. Or it's something fucking worse. And everyone is going through this like it's normal. Like these statements for Trump are normal. Well, this is normal, you know, because he's crazy. Even if he's crazy, it's not normal. Okay, none of this adds up. And Iran pausing doesn't look so smart because what they've given, well, what they've given the Israelis is a few weeks to do what the Israelis are good at, and that's really crooked shit. And this is the one thing the Iranians don't appear as good at as them, being really fucking crooked. So if you're battling the state of Israel, don't battle on the battlefield of being crooked because you're going to lose. Sorry, you heard it here first. The Iranians had the initiative, and for whatever strategic reason, they gave it up. You can say, oh, they still control the Strait of Hormuz. They control a noose on the planet. They control a noose on the whole planet. And guess what? The same people that will hate the United States aren't going to be so happy about them either. And if it comes down to eating or not, I don't know how to explain this to people. It's your kids screaming at night. Does that help you? Have a great rest of your fucking Wednesday.